This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
Good morning. Welcome back to class. And some of you, it's your first time. I'm just curious, how many of you were not here yesterday? Raise your hands. Okay. Very good. So we have a fair amount of repeats, a few new faces. Good to see everybody here. Handouts are right there. Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. So yesterday tended to be a bit more of the negative side. We talked about trauma, the effects on the brain. And I'm curious how it makes you feel after realizing how many children in America probably have experienced trauma either before they were born or after. I know how it makes me feel. It's kind of like, help. Is there any hope? But I want to come back. To the quote that we ended the class with yesterday. Although the world is full of suffering, it is also full of the overcoming of it. Today, we're going to look specifically at how can I teach this child? What are some things we can do in our classrooms and our methods of relating to them to be able to teach them? And just a reminder here at the beginning, when I give ideas here, I'm not trying to change your school's discipline code for everyone. This is just hopefully to give you some ideas for the child who is not responding to the way that you have done it for all your other students. So my prayer is that you can take some ideas and strategies with you to reach that child. And of course, it always takes a lot of prayer, Holy Spirit direction. It's not an easy job. But it is rewarding, very rewarding to work with these children. We talked a little bit about brain plasticity yesterday, and that is simply the ability of the brain to change. The brain is not a machine. It's a living, growing organism, and it has an enormous capacity for change. I think about how a brain can heal from a physical injury. There's an accident. People use physical therapy to help regain what was lost in the injury. Welcome. There's a handout right over there. I'm going to pick that up. So physical therapy helps the patient's brain to heal by relearning what they lost in the injury. And our students who face trauma in their early years have the same capacity for healing. They can grow new connections in their brain and learn new ways of coping with life. So if you fear that you've already messed up with a child and it's too late, it's actually not. There is hope for children of all ages. So let's look forward to the opportunities we have this coming year. See them as opportunities that God is giving us. So yesterday we talked about examples of how the trauma child acts, their behavior, difficulties they face. I really enjoyed reading what you wrote down yesterday in class. And reading those papers, I gather a fair amount of you could connect with what was being said. You've seen those types of behaviors in your children. So yeah, thanks for handing those papers in. So today, we're going to talk about ways that we can encourage the good and minimize the bad. And this is a resource. When I ask parents what books they recommend, this is a resource that a lot of them recommended. Several parents suggested this one, The Connected Child. This book talks about the importance of the balance of nurture and structure, and also has interesting examples in there that are easy to connect with. Repeated experiences create new brain connections. As we repeatedly give these children good experiences, we create new connections in their brain. We rewire the child's brain. So the lesson of the first year of life for a child is, who can I trust? A child is learning they are precious, their needs are met, and a child is rooted in that sense of preciousness. The lesson of the second year, perhaps to the 27th year, however far it goes, is, who's the boss? So when a child is manipulating, usually they have not learned the lesson of the first year. Once they can trust you, then they can let go of control. So our first job is to build trust. And how do we do that? Establish felt safety. Create an atmosphere in your classroom where your child feels safe. Now, why do I say felt safety? It's because what you know is safe and what the child feels is safe are very likely two different things. Megan, put down your pen, please. So, if I would say something like that to a trauma child, how do you think they would take it? Abrupt, kind of interrupting in the middle of a class? They might actually go home and tell their mom that the teacher yelled at them. Do you think I was yelling? It's abrupt, I wouldn't necessarily call it yelling, but that's how they feel. That's how they interpret things like that, that don't feel safe to them. You may go ahead writing anytime. So when they hear something like that, the tone of voice, basically to them, you're saying, I don't like you. Whereas a child who feels loved, you know, it might have startled them, but they probably won't dwell on that for the next how long. So establish felt safety. How can I establish felt safety? Observe. Watch the child for signs of anxiety and fear. What about shallow breathing? Clenched fists? A rigid posture? Sometimes the pupils of their eyes are enlarged. Can you change something to keep them from being afraid? When you see these triggers, can you figure out what it could be that's making them feel uncomfortable, what's making them feel afraid? Sometimes we can change things, sometimes we can't change what's making them afraid, and we can try to help them through it, talk through it. Provide structure. Create a good routine in your classroom. And I would put a plug in for starting out the school year. Think through the routine for your classroom and start out the school year focusing on the routine that you want to have. So a good routine helps a child to know what to expect. And if they know what to expect, it helps them to relax. And if they can relax, then they are ready to learn. One mom told me that routine with a relaxed atmosphere is everything for her child. That was a huge key. So what if something is changing in the routine for the day? Do you have trouble with your students becoming uncontrollable when it's different than normal? One thing you can do is you can prepare them ahead of time. And you'll have to know your child as far as to know how long before to tell them, because some children, as soon as you tell them, then they're not good for the rest of them. And then they can't concentrate until the exciting thing happens. But often they benefit from knowing ahead of time what you're going to do, talk them through it, how it's going to be. When I taught there at Myerstown, we did group activities with the whole school, and they were divided into groups. So one example of that is I had the Down syndrome students there. Tell them. What's going to happen? You know what? We're going down to the basement and we're going to make paper chains with the whole school. And you're going to be with your group. Do you remember who your group leader is? That's right. You're going to be working together with your group this afternoon. We're going to go down right after lunch. I have a friend who did this with a sixth grader. If something special was coming up, he often struggled with, welcome, there are a few extra handouts, help yourself. He struggled with behavior when things were out of the ordinary, he'd just get wild. And she used this for his behavior. Before the activity, they would talk through it. You know, what's gonna be your struggle? How should you behave in this situation? And she said that made a difference for him, thinking through ahead of time how he should react, how he should behave. Provide nurture. Find ways to show the child you love and care for them. Remember that they feel like the world is against them. We know it's not, but that's how they feel. So communicate that you are on their side, working with them to overcome their difficulties. And it takes a lot of wisdom to provide a good balance of structure and nurture. So if we need to up the structure, find ways to up the nurture as well. Use non-threatening voice tone, body language, and posture. Do I have an aggressive posture? Are my hands on my hips? Think about your body language. Are you shaking your finger at them? Those are things that could feel threatening to your child. Is your voice too firm? Some of them are very sensitive to voice tones. Also, use simple language. And this goes for academic instruction, as well as when you need to correct a child. They don't have the brain connections needed to benefit from a 15-minute sermon. So keep it short and to the point. So when you're correcting them, you might say something like, "What you did showed no respect." We need to use good words. Notice, no respect, that's what was wrong. Good words, teach them how to use good words. Other simple phrases, "It's not yours, don't touch it." They're struggling with that, and that's the phrase you use every time. Obey right away, it's another one. How about using visuals, pulling up a picture to go with it? One of my friends told the story of how a dad was working with his boy on a bad attitude, and he showed his boy a picture of a flat tire, and he said, "Your bad attitude is like a flat tire, and you need to change it." And then he sent that to the teachers at school, and they used the same visual at school. So that's just another idea. Don't just assume. This is a big one. It's so easy to look at the child and think they should just know things, especially when you compare them with their peers. However, he probably doesn't just know. And it takes a lot of wisdom to meet them where they are. And it takes a lot of patience to help them grow. But remember, he won't feel safe if he's expected to perform at a level above his capabilities. So remember, we're not gauging by their chronological age. We are gauging what they know from our observations, from observing them and watching them in our classroom. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. Do you remember more or less about what level trauma children are functioning at? About half their age level. I mean, it varies for lots of children, but you know, if you have one that's really struggling, if you think, well, if they're developmentally at a 6-year-old level instead of a 12-year-old level, it can maybe help you know where to go from there in helping them grow. And don't be surprised at anything. It's really easy to be shocked, incredulous, outraged at a child's annoying behaviors. But the last thing you want to say is, "You did what?" And sometimes the child purposely does something to get a negative reaction out of you. Hand out right there. Help yourself. Some children are so desperate to be in control that they will try to control you by getting a negative reaction out of you. Because they feel in control if they know what buttons to push to make you frustrated. So that's a challenge for us. It's hard, but it's something we need to keep practicing, is relating to them calmly and evenly in any situation. You know, inside we might be worked up, but on the outside just try to be calm. Use calm voice tones. Even if you send him to the office and he starts slicing the rubber on the sweeper hoses with a rotary cutter, he didn't actually ruin them. He just got through the outside rubber protecting part. Or how about a 13-year-old girl who uses a black pen and draws a dark mustache on her upper lip? 13-year-old? And the pen was a privilege. She got to write with pen that day, and that's what she did. So it's best to deal with issues as soon as possible so you can work through it and move back into positive interaction. But I'm not superhuman, and I'm guessing you aren't either, and sometimes we do have to give ourselves some space. to be able to think through it before we deal with the issue. Grow thick skin. Remember that you are facing the effects of trauma that has happened in the child's past. Don't take it personally. One way this can happen in the classroom is they might constantly compare you to last year's teacher and just make last year's teacher sound wonderful and great, and you really should be doing it this way. Especially if we're new teachers, that can be intimidating. But one idea of how to respond would be, hey, that's a good idea, but this is a new year, this is how we're doing it. And maybe you even incorporate the ideas later, but probably not at the moment, because they could be using that for control. And don't let yourself feel threatened when relating to parents. I say that parents are one of your greatest resources. I can't emphasize this one enough. Communicate with the parents. And if you have a difficult child, you're going to be communicating with them a lot. There's just a lot to stay in touch on. Parents can really help us know what's happening in the child's life, what could be some triggers. It can help us be more understanding. If the parents share something that's going on at home and we're like, okay, that could affect the school day today, sometimes you can talk with a child at school a little bit about it and just help them to be able to relax a little more, just them knowing you know it, depending on the child. So yes, please, communicate with the parents. Be okay with asking the parents what you should do differently. As scary as it can be, do it anyway. It's rewarding. They usually have helps for you. And one of the biggest reasons that communication is so important is that a trauma child will often try to make you look really bad to their parents, but then they will try to make their parents look really bad to you. So they like to play the teacher against the parents. And if you keep connecting with the parents, you keep talking about it, you can keep misunderstandings from happening or from getting too big. And that is so helpful. Now, teachers have a hard job, because we're not only working to create safety, to win their trust, but we also have the books, the academics, the expectations there. How many of you are going to be in a full-time classroom? A lot of you have many other students in your classroom. I would say instead of stressing the academics the first couple weeks of school, work on creating a good routine, observing your student, and seeing what you can do to create a safe atmosphere. I did that even when I didn't have trauma students. I taught middle grades mostly, the years I did not do special education. And the first week or two of school, I focused on the major subjects and just creating routines, what I expected from my students. How do we build trust? Through good relationships. Relationship is super important, because relationships develop healthy connections and neurotransmitters in the child's brain. Now, because of experiences in the past, they desperately want a relationship. They really do. But at the same time, they may desperately fear a relationship. What reason do they have to believe that you won't hurt them too? So persist in building a relationship even when the payback is long in coming. They recognize kindness. Kindness is so important. They remember that. I would love to have some class discussion. What are some ways to build relationships with your students? What are some things, ideas, things that you have done with your students? Very good. I like those ideas. And you know what? Some of the greatest rewards are some of the most simplest things to do. Sincere affection, heartfelt praise, human attention, eye contact, and safe human touch are also things that speak to these children. So instead of using those 3 extra minutes between classes to look at the latest WhatsApp status, put your hand on a child's shoulder and compliment them for the good job they're doing in their work. Dopamine is released with human relationship. That's the hormone that allows us to feel joy and pleasure. And new synapses are formed in the brain even at 90 years of age. See bad behaviors through eyes of compassion. When your student appears physically normal, it's easy to assume that bad behavior is willful and intentional. Bad behavior is most likely the outward sign of inward turmoil. Think about what may be going through the child's mind. Could it be disappointment, frustration, sadness, fear of failure? They might be struggling with questions about their birth parents, why they didn't want them. That usually comes up somewhere in the journey. Some struggle with that pretty young. Anger is almost always a secondary emotion. It covers fear or pain. The most violent children are often the most tender-hearted ones. They needed to be protected when they were little, and no one was there. If the child is suddenly having bad days at school, most likely the parents are experiencing some of the same things at home. They can give you clues to what's going on with the child. We talked about that a little bit earlier. Is the child reactive to things that don't make sense? Could it be that their brain is associating something that happened today with bad experiences in the past? And it's nothing about the moment. I told the story of a little girl who was getting distracted when I was doing math practice with her, and my classroom door was the outside. And so sometimes I kept it open, sometimes I shut it, and she was getting distracted, so I just stood up and shut the classroom door. And right after that, she went into freeze mode. And she just, I had actually not seen the freeze mode before her. She just sat there for a long time. And the only thing I can think of that may have triggered that freeze was shutting the door. I don't know, she was from an abusive past, so that triggers something. Bad behavior may be the result of a dysregulated brain caused by early trauma. And some of the most infuriating behaviors are meltdowns. I don't know if any of you have experienced those at school. I did not experience, well, actually to more or lesser degree, they weren't serious. I didn't experience them as much at school, but I have seen them. Where the child loses it and you can't reason with them, and it takes them a while to calm down and get through the meltdown. The child is using the bottom part of their brain. They're using that survival, fight, flight, or freeze. Children melt down when they can't calm themselves. That's a function of the upper part of the brain. So as a baby, parents comfort their child when it's crying. Through this care, a small child learns to calm themselves. A child who has not had the comfort of an adult has not learned to regulate his behavior, hence the meltdown. So even though they're past what seems like the two-year-old tantrum stage, they need that care, they need that consistency, and eventually, they develop the capacity to calm and comfort themselves in stress. So there is hope of helping them through this stage. So often we just want to stop the behavior. We just want to fix it now. And it's so much easier for us that way. But instead look for ways to respond that help them overcome. And we won't work miracles overnight. It's changes that are going to come little by little. Celebrate the small successes. So just remember that behavior that may seem so strong and threatening to me as a teacher probably portrays a very sensitive, fragile child inside. And back to this one, same slide, but it's so exciting I have it on twice. I'm gonna read a little story out of here to illustrate what we've just been talking about. 6-year-old Janie didn't have much of an appetite during the day at school, but later, when her ADHD stimulant drugs wore off, she would become ravenous. One evening she asked, "Mommy, I'm hungry. Can I have a snack bar?" Busy in the kitchen, preparing a large meal for the family, her mother replied, "No, sweetheart, in 10 minutes we're going to eat the chicken and vegetables I'm fixing for supper." Janie exploded into tears and began shrieking, "I hate you! I hate you! You are so mean! You are a mean mother! You never let me have anything!" The little girl ran into her bedroom, slammed the door, and began to sob loudly. Horrified, Janie's bewildered and disappointed mom couldn't imagine what had triggered the outburst. Deep fear caused Janie to explode into tears when she was denied the snack bar. To the little girl who had spent a painfully hungry year in an orphanage, the promise of dinner in 10 minutes was no real comfort. She remembered going to bed hungry every night after orphanage workers ignored her pleas for food. Even though Janie's mom understood that good food was coming shortly and her daughter was in no danger of starving, the traumatized primitive part of Janie's brain just couldn't grasp that. Starvation is encoded in her deepest memory. When refused a snack bar, Janie panicked, fearing she would die of starvation. How might Janie's mother have responded in a way that provided felt safety without spoiling her daughter's appetite for a home-cooked meal? Here's how. "Mommy, I'm hungry. Can I have a snack bar?" "Yes, dear. You may have a snack bar and you may eat it right after supper." Mother puts the bar into her daughter's hands. "Do you want to put it beside your plate on the dinner table or keep it in your pocket until dinner is over?" This simple act would reassure Janie that she won't go hungry. She still isn't permitted to eat until dinner time, but now she can touch the food and know it is hers to eat. Deciding whether to put the bar on the table or keep it with her helps Janie feel more in control of the situation and lets her practice self-control. Small choices like these are comforting to a traumatized child and build trust. Communicate to the child that you think they are precious and you believe in them. They feel like a failure. Communicate that you believe in them. Even in the times when it is hard to feel love towards them, it's okay. Just be kind anyway. And God's grace will help us through. Be playful, actively engaging your students in learning. Playfulness signals safety and disarms fear. This is a powerful one. Be a little silly, laugh together. I would love to have some practical ideas from the class again on ways that you incorporate playfulness or keep the classes interesting, alive. One idea is using puppets, and I just raided the toy box. So you can use puppets to teach good words. "Get out of my way!" "Oops." "How about using good words?" "Oh. Excuse me, please?" "Way to go using good words." Simple things like that. You're teaching, you're talking to your puppets and not to them. So it's a non-confrontational way to teach. Along the same idea, you could allow them to hold a stuffed animal for part of the morning. And then if they're not sticking at it, scold the stuffed animal. They know it's them. What ideas do you use? Yes, write the verse on the board and they say the whole verse, erase one word, they say the verse again. Yeah, that's good. What others? Imaginative stories. Some children love stories, if you can put things into a story. One of my friends told me about a little boy that needed a lot of help to stay motivated in his work. And so she drew a little house on fire at the bottom of one of those fact papers. And she said, "You better hurry and get it done or the house is going to burn up before you get there." And it worked. Be an effective leader. A balance of calmness and patience mixed with confidence. Calmness creates a safe, relaxed atmosphere. However, the student also feels safe when a confident adult is in charge. And don't say something unless you're willing to carry it out. Because how can they trust you if you don't stick to your word? So many children want to control through manipulation. So when you can give simple choices where they can choose, something like, you know what, you can use a colored pencil to underline your answers today. Would you like a blue one or a red one? Simple choices help them to feel more comfortable, more confident. And don't overlook the withdrawn trauma child. They need relationship and experiences just as badly as the others, even though they don't demand our attention. Take time for them. I said that other slide was the most exciting one, but actually maybe this one is. What happens in the child's brain when they feel genuinely safe? The survival part of his brain stops being so super vigilant. You disarm the fear that is controlling their actions. The child relaxes. Trust begins to grow and blossom. And then the child can begin to access the higher regions of the brain, allowing for growth in areas such as reasoning and logic. So, how should we handle bad behavior? First of all, see bad behavior as a teaching opportunity. It's not the end of the world if your student was bad. It's an opportunity to teach. Whenever possible, connect and then correct. We're busy, and it's so easy just to forget sometimes how important the connecting is. I know I have made a lot of mistakes. Sometimes the behavior is hurtful and destructive, and it needs to be stopped immediately. One idea is if a child hurts someone, is requiring them to do something nice for that person in return. If they waste somebody's time, require them to do a job to make up for it. Examples of cause and effect consequences. So we want to first connect whenever possible. How do we connect with a child? Get close to the child's level, sit next to them. Megan had mentioned yesterday about one of her students that would freeze. And she found out that if she was just a little bit lower than his eye level, is that right? That he was a lot less likely to go into freeze mode. We don't think about it when we're standing and the child's sitting. That's normal, right? I mean, that's just, we're moving about our classroom. But some children, if you get next to them, get a little bit lower than their eye level, they feel safer. Hold the child's hands if they are age appropriate for this. Touch can do much to calm a child. Touch actually raises the level of serotonin, which is the neurotransmitter that makes us feel happy and relaxed. So touch is actually doing something in their brains. Make eye contact, and some children will not be good at this. So start out with a little bit. Lightly touch their chin, get them to make eye contact with you. And keep working on it. Work for longer and longer periods of eye contact. They must see it in your eyes that you aren't angry with them. Eye contact is powerful. The little girl that I worked with who went into freeze mode also would go into fight mode sometimes. And I held her for a long time and she did not calm down. And actually one of my co-teachers said, make eye contact with her. I tipped her back far enough that she saw my eyes and then she broke. That was a powerful lesson to me, what eye contact can do. Okay, here's your math lesson for today. Let me get started. So validate the child's feelings. Identify the frustration or the anger or what's going on. And then give the child a voice. Teach them to use good words. And it's going to take a lot of practice. Practice, practice, practice. And when you're through it, always end on a good note. Praise them for using good words. Give high fives, things like that. So remember especially the practice part. It does really, really take a lot of practice. Yeah, and it's just amazing how much, especially when I was working with the Down syndrome students. I know those aren't trauma students, it's a different kind of student, but it did teach me how to break things down into small steps. And I think some of those same things apply. So, yeah, always end on a good note, praise them, things like that. All right, what should we do if a child refuses to follow a command? Tell them clearly and simply what you expect of them. Give them a think it over spot. So the child does something wrong and they're not willing to listen to you. They're refusing to do something you asked. Tell them again simply and clearly that this is what they need to do. And then give them a think it over spot, ideally close to you. However, with a full-time classroom, some children are pretty disruptive. You may need a spot outside the classroom for them to go. Sending a trauma child out of the room can give the message, I don't want you, they've been abandoned once, and they fear it happening again. So be sensitive, but if you need a spot outside of the classroom, I'm sure there's safe places that you could have as a regular spot for them, if you have one that's disruptive. Tell them again what you expect of them. Tell them that when they are ready to listen, they should say, ready, and you will come. After the child says ready, hold his hands if age appropriate. Look into his eyes and then compliment him for using good words. Because telling you that he's ready is good communicating. And then after he lets you know that he is ready, go back to the exact spot where he acted up. A child has body memory, and they'll remember better if you go back to the scene of the crime and have him do what you asked him to do in the first place. If the child hurt someone else or took something, make restitution. As many doors as a child walked through to get into trouble, make him come back through those same doors. So one of my friends told me the story of a little boy that she taught that would get disruptive. Very disruptive. So one day, he got angry about a simple command, and the rest of the students were either out for recess or possibly they got dismissed for an impromptu recess. And my friend left the room, and she shut the door because she knew that he was going to start throwing things and went to get the principal. When they came back to the classroom, the principal and my friend peeked in the window, and she's like, he's going to push his desk over. The little second grader rocking his desk back and forth. And the principal said, let him. Then we'll have something to work with. Sure enough, the little fellow rocked his desk until he dumped it over. And then he began picking up handfuls of books and crayons and pencils and throwing them around the room. So the principal walked in, and the little boy had enough respect for the principal that he stopped. So they talked through the issue, and then it was time to go back through those doors. He needed to clean up all his things. The teacher said, okay, you need to pick up your things and put them away. So he meekly began collecting his things. And after he had most of his things in his desk, the teacher didn't know for sure if he had all of them in or not. So she asked him, anything else? And he points to the corner cupboard. And the teacher's like, you put something in there? He's like, they're on top. And she said, what's on top? He said, my pencil crayons. She said, how are you going to get them down? And he said, I guess I need a chair. So he pushed a chair over and he could just reach on top and retrieve his pencil crayons. And sure enough, he had several up there. Give consequences as needed. And hopefully this talk helps us understand more about where the child is coming from. Developmentally, they aren't on the same level as their peers. They need to be taught things that other children just pick up on. Be consistent. I think more important than giving exactly the right consequences is consistently working on wrong behavior. Sometimes we may simply ask for a redo. Sometimes we might practice with them, and sometimes we will need to give consequences. So I believe as we observe our trauma children and learn to know them, as we work with them, we'll be able to decipher when the behavior is willful and needs consequences, and when it's something that needs more teaching and practice. Our goal is improvement, no matter how small the steps may be. Remember that 3 steps forward and 2 steps backwards is still progress. Always end on a good note. Praise them for being strong enough to do what you ask them to do. And once we're finished, once we've taken care of the issue, it's done. Go back to playful interaction. Withdrawing relationship is like pouring Clorox on their hearts. I have one more point on the behavior. Disrespect is never okay. I have a few more things here. We don't have time for me to go over them in detail. Oh, yeah. These next things are included in your handout. And these are just things, ideas. Some of them, it's up to the parents whether or not they want to implement them, so we as teachers can't necessarily do it for the child, but we can give ideas. Nutrient-rich food every 2 hours. A good diet with nutritious snacks between meals can keep blood sugar stabilized and prevent the child from mood swings throughout the day. Protein promotes brain function. Some children benefit from common supplements. Maybe because of malnutrition, maybe their mom did not eat well before they were born. If they were formula fed, they're more prone to some of the common vitamin and mineral deficiencies. So that's another thing to think about. Multivitamin, mineral supplement, essential fatty acids, probiotics. Our gut is where the serotonin, the feel-good transmitter, neurotransmitter is produced. And if our digestive system is run down due to bad bacteria, our body doesn't get the nutrients it needs. So that's another one that's fairly common with trauma children, is where their digestive system needs some extra support. Some children do have food allergies. That's something else to try. Gluten, dairy, and refined sugar are the 3 most common ones. You can do the process of elimination, take it out of their diet for a while, see if it makes a difference. Make sure they drink plenty of water, good sleep, and exercise. Regular periods of exercise help to calm a child and give them the ability to regulate themselves. Physical exercise or physical activity every 2 hours brings excitatory neurotransmitters down. And then there are also midline exercises, and there's resources out there that can give you ideas for exercises you can do in your classroom, maybe on a break in between classes. I have used exercises from this manual already. I know there's a book out there, Brain Gym. I'm not sure if I'd recommend all the exercises in there, but they do have some that could give ideas. But something as simple as everybody standing and doing the cross crawl, crossing over the midline of your body, helps both sides of the brain to work together. Simple exercises that you can incorporate into your classroom. They won't hurt anybody, and it might benefit some of them. Joan Martin is a resource for evaluating children. If you have parents who are desperate for help and would like to talk to somebody who has a lot of experience, have her contact information there. I have included in your handout, I just went around asking teachers for tips. I made out 40 tips. Maybe you read over them sometime. Maybe there's something helpful in there for the middle of next school year. I have a list of recommended reading, books that I enjoyed, that I found helpful. There again, I included the information in your handout so that you just read down over that. Children with disabilities are like butterflies with a broken wing. They are just as beautiful as all others, but they need help to spread their wings. The trauma child will always be fragile, and we're going to have to be more vigilant and make sure we are meeting their needs. God bless you as you make a difference in your children's lives this year.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.